Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behaviour in a business context. Season 3 is all about behaviour at work, how people show up, how managers lead, and how organisations build high performance cultures. We're speaking with senior leaders to uncover the thinking that drives behaviour, the trends shaping management development, and the future of work in an ever-changing world. In this episode, we're joined by Jenny O'Peary, a seasoned HR executive whose incredible journey from room attendant to senior leadership in some of the world's most prestigious luxury hotel brands is nothing short of inspiring. We dive into the unique challenges of the hospitality industry, where high turnover is the norm, and explore the strategies that truly drive long-term loyalty. Jenny O shares his insights on building a culture that keeps talent engaged, the role of mentoring in career progression, and how HR can be transformed from a support function into a profit-driving powerhouse. Well, welcome, Jenny O. We're so pleased to have you join us today. I think the opening question has to be, you went from room attendant up to CEO, and obviously you've got a really varied background in luxury hotels. Tell us a little bit to start with about how you think that breadth of experience and having worked at all those different levels influenced you as a leader.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky. You know, as you said, you know, I joined the industry, the hotel industry anyway, when I was just before I turned 18. But before that, I had actually worked at a McDonald's and I was actually the manager of that McDonald's as well. So I was doing it since I was a teenager. I was always that kind of person. And it's funny, you know, I get asked a lot, you know, by younger generation when I go to schools and things like that, you know, what advice would you give? And I'm always like, take the risk. You know, when they say, oh, we have this job to do, you know, put up your hand and do it. Oh, we have an opportunity in China, put up your hand and go. You know, and I've sort of always looked at my career that way. And I think because of those breadths of experience, I've really been able to look at things very differently. I really like things and looking at employment and jobs and people's careers from an operational perspective, because I really do think it has to mirror the direction that the business is going in. So, you know, when you're talking to people about their careers, or you're talking about, or I'm looking at my own career and I'm thinking, I want to do that experience because I think I want to go down this path in the future. Even if I don't go down that path, that's okay. But if I did, I'd want to know that I had a bit of experience so that I could have maybe some subject matter expertise, or I can say I've walked a mile in that shoe, which is really important. I think of the hotel industry, you know, in a traditional hotel, there's 25 different departments, you know, myriad of different jobs. You know, over my career, I've worked in approximately 18 different departments, you know, from engineering to finance to, of course, people and culture, front desk, wide variety of food and beverage. And I'll tell you, the more I grew in those roles, the more I was able to say, you know, when they were talking about there was an issue with some sort of, you know, the air conditioning system, I could know what they were talking about because I spent some time in engineering. Or if they're saying we're going to get slammed in the restaurant for lunch today, I could understand what it means to be slammed in the restaurant for lunch. And maybe you don't have enough servers, or you need more cooks in the kitchen, or whatever the case may be. So I think having some practical experience is always good. You know, it helps you. I'm not saying it's 100% necessary, but for me in my career, it really helped me, you know, continue to elevate because it gives me a different perspective. And I think that really helped me.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you speak to young people at early stages of their decision-making process around what they do next, often they feel like they have to make the final decision and it has to be the right decision. And I think, you know, listening to what you're saying is that it's okay to go and do something and then do something else and then do something else. And even if it's within, you know, a particular industry, but then you gain that breadth and experience to be able to shape exactly the pathway that you want to go on and take those risks. I think that's such a lovely message for young people particularly.
And absolutely, you know, and it's one of the things I really love about this generation, you know, this newer generation. I can't believe I speak like this, you know, because for the longest time, I felt like I was
you
that
were
generation.
The generation.
And then you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I'm 50. But anyway, it is what it is. But, you know, and I love it. And I know there's people in the world that think, oh, you know, they want this so fast and they want to move up so quickly. But I've always believed it's not about the time in your job. It's about what you're putting into your job that counts. months. And it's okay to have only had 6 months experience if you really put your all into that experience and you showed that you really took the time to understand, you took the time to build relationships, you took time to maybe master a part of the skill. You know, sometimes it's not possible to learn everything, but you really mastered that one aspect that really made the difference or, you know, changed something or elevated something or built the right relationship. That to me, that's worth its weight in gold. And then that person really deserves another opportunity. It's not always about, I got to get the next promotion. It's sometimes it's just about the next bit of knowledge. And I think if you can put people on that path where, you know, over the course of 2 years, I actually learned 8 new skills or new experiences, that's bigger than a promotion at times, as long as you're treating them well, paying them well, you know, allowing them to build great relationships, making sure the company has a good culture. I think it's equally as rewarding for that generation. And I think they will say that too. It's a myth that they must have this and they must have that. They just want to grow, they want to learn, and they want to know they have a purpose. What's behind what I'm doing?
I love that. You're totally speaking our language. And I think that's such a refreshing viewpoint for senior leaders. Obviously, doing what we do in the management development space, you often hear this almost reticence to provide training, to provide opportunities, because there's this link often that senior leaders make with, if I give them that, I have to then promote them. And actually, I think that piece around actually just giving them the next bit of knowledge, just because you're handing somebody knowledge, if they're then rewarded and remunerated and looked after in the right way, doesn't mean that next bit of knowledge has to lead to a promotion. Absolutely. Per se. So I think that's it's a really lovely ethos.
And to me, this really centers then around the culture of a company. Because if the culture of the company is set up that, you know, you do a training program and then there's an expectation of more salary or there's an expectation of a job promotion, then that's the culture your company has created, as opposed to you're joining a culture where you're bettering something bigger. You know, are you bettering the vision? Are you bettering the country? Are you bettering the guest experience, the employee experience, whatever the case may be? And I think learning and development needs to be seen that way. You know, we go through our whole lives, you know, you think about the journey of your life, right? Your parents have a responsibility to your education, your development, your training, right? Your school has a responsibility to that. And so does your employer. You know, and your employers have to take that seriously. You know, management development, training, learning, growth, education, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to, whatever terminology you want to use, is really about bettering a bigger purpose again, a bigger culture. And what is that culture you want to create? Because I see a lot of people, and I've seen the fortune of it through my entire career of, you know, if you're making somebody better at work, you're teaching them something. You know, in hotels, we spend a lot of time doing training and interactions with guests and all that kind of stuff. We always felt the larger purpose of that was we're making that person a better person in society as well. And there's something about, again, you hear me say this a lot probably today, it goes back to what is the bigger purpose of what you're trying to do here? And I think that's really important in management development.
And I think, you know, we know you've spoken a little bit about leading with kindness. It probably links to this culture piece, but what does that actually look like in practice? Especially in sort of high pressured environments, particularly in like the hospitality space.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I want to preface all of this with we're all humans, right? We all have good days, we all have bad days, you know, we all have, you know, roller coasters. I can be the nicest person, and for sure there's times where I may have lost my, you know, cool, let's say, not really my temper, but my cool, if you will. And I think it's important to do that, but everyone goes on a journey and that's what it's all about. And I think the idea of leading with kindness is really about two things for me. It's about, first of all, making sure you are properly listening to people. There's always that thing when somebody's talking to you and you're already thinking what you're going to say, as opposed to actually just be quiet and actually listen to what the person is saying. Because usually what the person is saying is never the problem, right? By that point, they have the courage to finally say something, and you have to get through all of that stuff they say at the beginning to actually find out what is the real issue at hand. I really genuinely believe that. And then secondly is, you know, that level of emotion has to equal the level of concern. So really about that's where, you know, empathy comes into it, or compassion, or however you want to do it. And I believe they're different. But that idea that when you're hearing that concern or that issue or that problem on the floor, or it doesn't have to be about the person specifically, it could be about the business itself. And then, you know, how is this making this person feel? What is it doing to the business? Then that's where your concern has to match with that. And making sure that you're taking action in that kind of way. And I think if you're doing that, then you are leading by kindness. I think there's always going to be times when there's high pressure situations and you have to deal with somebody, or something's on your back, or a customer's really upset, or your board is upset, or whatever the case may be. But if you're employing, as I say, those two things, then you're moving in the right direction to your outcome will then be kind, I think. Or understood.
Yeah. And what you're saying there is, I think there can be this misconception with the word kindness, that kindness means soft. And actually, you know, that whole Brené Brown clear is kind ethos of actually really what we're talking about there is clarity. It's about facilitating conversation.
Communication.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you, because I'm sure you've come across in your career, leaders that maybe don't share the same ethos. And we hear a lot about, especially in the training space, the learning and development space that we're in, that sometimes that's not prioritized as much in hospitality outside of the sort of bare minimum, because you often see this churn in those lower level roles. So there's always that question around how much do we invest in people when it's high churn? Tell us a little bit about your experience with that and where you've maybe had some pushback and what your response to that has been.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is true. I do think you sometimes see that in the hospitality industry. I think you see it in any high turn, high volume type of industry. You know, I would personally, you know, if that was the issue that I was facing in my company, I would step it back one further to say, why are we having the high turn? Right? Because, you know, you need to apply all of your principles. You need to apply how you're going to manage your business or lead your business or inspire your business based on the reality of what it is. Right. And if it is about high turnover, and you know, that's an issue because, you know, the leaders are just having to stay on almost like auto repeat because they're not building those right relationships, you know, all of those types of things, then I would want to go back further and say, okay, why are we having the high turn? How are we going to minimize that? Understanding that there's some positions that it always happens in. But I have seen very successfully very low turnover in hospitality industries for the people that treat their employees well. And I think that has to be the focus at first. And that really, again, comes up to your culture, you know, your pay and reward, you know, are you listening to your employees? What type of environments are you providing them? All of those types of things. So I would, you know, just to preface all of that with that being said, that has to be the primary focus first. I think then if you have leaders that are not actually doing it the right way, living the culture, then always you have to seek to understand first, you know, why, if we've given you all the tools, if we're providing the environment, you know, is this just your style? Can we provide, you know, development for you? Maybe we need to look at things from a different perspective. I'm a big believer, again, sometimes people are just put in the wrong roles, but they are very talented. So I think you have to, you know, again, what is your culture? I always go back to that, you know, and I'm always surprised at how many companies don't really define what culture is. And I think if you haven't defined what your culture is or how you bring it to life, then how are you holding people accountable towards it? So then it's, you know, if you haven't done that and you don't really understand that your vision is infinite, it's not just that. And you may have values, every company have values, but if you don't actually understand the behaviors and the actions that actually bring those to life, then you're going to get that. You're going to have one leader that's really awesome and another one that maybe is more challenging, or you're going to have one high performer and several low performers because you haven't set the standard of what you're trying to achieve, which is much bigger than vision and values because it is about the culture. Me personally, I've always defined culture as the decisions people make, because you got to keep it simple, right? Because you have every level of employee in your business. So I always say, you know, you have your values and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you have two employees who are walking, they pass each other in a corridor or in the change room or whatever the case may be. Do they say hi to each other? Ultimately, that's a decision to smile, acknowledge each other. If you do, then you're positively contributing to our value of respect or our value of, you know, personalities that work together or working together or teamwork. If you don't, then you're not positively contributing to that. And that's a very simple one, all the way up to guest relations, to boards, general managers, all of those types of things. But it starts at that base level because 90% of the workforce is line level in most cases, right? So it's really important to sort of peel back the layers. Too many times companies are like, oh God, we have a problem with that manager. We have a problem in the sales team, or we have a problem in the front office team. And they just want to dive into the problem versus like, why is there a problem to begin with? If we've created the right culture, then obviously we haven't. Where's the misstep in? And then go.
If you're interested in learning more about your own management behaviors and the behaviors of your team, click the link in the show notes to access a 14-day free trial of Perform.
It's so true. You see them look at that micro level versus actually what's happening at a macro level. What are you encouraging, discouraging? What's the unspoken rules? What's all of those different things?
Just want to go back, Gino, a little bit to what you said about really the way I'm thinking of it is like your internal customers and your external customers, and how do you connect the two? And one of the things that we see when we're working with middle managers is this conundrum between spending time, customer stuff often gets prioritized, and the internal stuff is the stuff that gets pushed. So if they're also a manager of people, but they're still delivering in some way, often the internal stuff, the one-to-ones, the touch points, the training, the conversations with their employees gets like moved. And we're big advocates of, you know, really making sure that that's seen as a priority, something you're measured against and that. Yeah. But I love that sort of connection piece between transition and all the stuff that you're doing with your internal team to then your end customer and connecting the dots with that.
That's it.
It's
And I mean, we did that in various ways. I think there's two ways I could respond to that. The first is, you know, you got to understand, why do your employees want to work for you, and why do your guests want to come to you, right? What are you trying to satisfy, right? I mean, I always say that you don't give people a job, you give people a reason to live. That should be your purpose in people and culture. At the end of the day, I'm giving you a job, not because you need a job, maybe you do, but by me giving you a job, I'm giving you an opportunity to pay your rent. Maybe I'm giving you an opportunity to go on a holiday, to have a family, buy a home, buy a car. I should be driven by that kind of purpose as an HR person, because then I'm driven by something that's much greater than just I have to fill the housekeeper job or the front desk agent job or the, you know, whatever the case may be. And I'm also satisfying a bit of an emotional need for that person, which is comfort, almost like Maslow hierarchy of need. You're satisfying something for that employee by giving them that job that is so much greater than just, now I have to go somewhere 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, which isn't always fun for people, right? A same thing is, you can say that same kind of question about your guests. You know, what emotional need, what are you trying to satisfy in getting that customer to come to you? Well, you know, people usually go to 5-star luxury hotels because it's a status thing. So, you know, to say I'm staying at the best hotel in London or California or Japan, whatever the case may be, you know, you're satisfying that. I'm staying with you because you make life easier for me, because you take the worry out of my stay. I know I'm going to get good service. I know that I'm going to be impressive if I have clients there. I know you're going to take care of my children. You know, there's various different emotional needs that you satisfy in that customer. So then how, again, do you connect those two? The emotional need of the guest, the emotional need of the employee, and you do that through the behaviors which and how they come to life, which speaks directly to your values, right? So there's that side of the coin. The other side of the coin, which, you know, you mentioned already, is that time factor, right? And that's so important. And I think we all know, and I'm sure, you know, you're in the business, I've been in the business, you know, we hear all the time, there's just not enough time. And, you know, it's even hard for people to go to training, let alone you want me to sit down every day with 20 minutes with each of my employees, you know, where I won't have time to do the schedules or ordering or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, one of the things that, you know, I always looked at time as, you know, people talk a lot about innovation, and of course you can use technology, you can use all these things, you know, what is the enabler? But for me, you know, innovation is time. Right. So I always looked at innovation as anything that gives back time. So if it just means, you know, I'm going to now, we're going to put the coffee cup somewhere different. So as a result of moving those coffee cups, it'll take the employee 20 seconds less to replenish the coffee cups or change the tables. Well, that's 20 seconds that I've given back that employee, making their life a little bit easier. And it's also 20 seconds I've given them to spend more time with the guest so they can build a relationship with the guest. So now I've satisfied both needs, right? And so again, I just go back to, it has to all come back to the culture of the company. So what is important to you? What is important if your customer is the employee or the customer is the guest? Well, what's gonna satisfy those? And you know, to me, really the only thing we always are gonna always have in common is time. Time is something that you can do through technology, through better processes, through better policies, procedures, whatever the case may be, scheduling, et cetera, et cetera. That's gonna benefit both parties and again, help your culture.
You're so on the same wavelength as us, and that's why we're so passionate about the behavioral work that we do and managers understanding the behaviors of their team. Because to your point, if you can do that, if you understand that, I love that bit around we're not just giving them a job, we're essentially fueling their opportunities. And actually, if you understand what motivates someone, what drives them, what's the reason they get out of bed, where, in what scenario do they enjoy work the best? What are their strengths? If you understand all of those things, it's way easier to then design your interventions according to that. So we're so on the same page about that.
It's so interesting, you know, because when I first went into HR, it wasn't the plan to work in HR. Somebody said to me, oh, you're really good with people, you should try HR. So it was one of those departments I did, right? And I remember I was lucky. I became an HR director at 25. I was quite young. So, and I remember I was in that job for 3 years before I moved on to another company. And unbeknownst to me, when I first started in the HR job, I hired a few room attendants, cleaners for the rooms and stuff like that. And I hired this one lovely girl her name was Sangeeta. She was really, really lovely, Indian girl. And, you know, she was there when I left. And when I left, I went to the new employer. One day I'm sitting in the new employer and I get a letter and it's from her. You know, this room attendant wrote me to my new job. And she wrote me this incredible letter, which I still have, that said, you know, I just really wanted to thank you. You know, at the time I had just immigrated from India to Canada. This was my first job, but as a result of this job, I was able to sponsor my husband. He came to Canada, and now we have a child, and it's all because you gave me this job. And it just changed my whole life, because I never looked at my job like that before. And then I thought to myself, oh my God, I gave this person an ability to like start a family. And I just never looked at the job that way before. And ever since then, you know, it was one of the most valuable lessons I learned in my entire life as a 28-year-old, thinking I'm serving a higher purpose being in HR. And it really made me really respect the industry, the job, even more than I ever had.
What a way to shape that future career experiences like that.
Yeah.
I'm interested, Jenio, in metrics. So you've talked a lot about HR being a profit driving function of the business, and I think in so many organizations that's the bit that gets forgotten sometimes. And sometimes it's unintentional, and we actually recorded a separate podcast where we talked a lot about ROI and how HR's job is becoming more strategic. And you've talked about different ways that you measured the internal customer, so employee experience, culture, and then you've also talked about some unconventional ways of measuring guest happiness beyond the sort of traditional satisfaction survey. Can you share with us some of those, some practical things that you use to be able to demonstrate ROI in what often feels like a bit of an intangible emotional feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think like everything, again, I mean, I think I'm going to, again, I preface all of my answers with a little bit of forethought, but I think, again, you have to define what is the role of people and culture in order for you to understand what your metrics are. So what is the role of people and culture in the business? If it is just the traditional, you know, recruitment engagement, you know, then there's the traditional measures that we all know about, right? When I took over, or when I started taking, you know, very senior level roles in people and culture, I immediately took over the responsibility of guest experience, not just employee experience. I took over the responsibility of CSR, which is now today ESG, and I took over innovation. You know, so then, you know, because, you know, goes without saying, you know, for all of those things to happen, it's your employees that are making them happen, right? Everything is connected. It's a bit of that 80-20 rule. You know, one decision actually affects so many things anyway, especially when it comes to learning and development programs, all of those kinds of things, you know, how you engage with the community, how you engage with your customers, how you actually produce the guest experience you're looking for. So then your metrics can be quite exciting in a way, you know, because you're no longer looking at, you know, I still think you have to look at turnover, although I don't look at turnover in the most traditional way. I've always looked at it, the voluntary turnover, why people are actively choosing to leave you, first of all. And I also, as I said earlier, it's not about the time in the position, it's about what they did in the position. So I think metrics around, you know, short-term goals are really important. I do metrics around, okay, somebody wasn't the right fit, because you hire somebody and you think, okay, they're going to be great in front desk. And then 3 months in, they're like, I hate this job. And usually what happens is they leave, as opposed to, well, what did we do to try to find them another role in the operation, because, you know, and that can be a metric unto itself. So those are those traditional HR ones. But for me, it was more exciting to do the metrics around the guest experience. So again, you know, because we tied the guest experience questions to the employee experience questions, with the values being the connector in the two, then you can have very specific metrics around, you know, did we achieve that guest loyalty? You know, did we problem solve in the right way? You know, did we turn a situation around? What is the repeat guest ratios? You know, all of those types of things, because they can be directly related to employee programs that were created, you know, to build that loyalty, you know, around meaningful relationships, you know, things along those lines. So I think we had a lot of success in that. When it came to innovation, it was around, you know, that ability to innovate and implement. So again, the idea creation, you know, what exactly time we're saving, how do we see that, you know, how do we update our policies and procedures around that, what time were we getting back? You know, it's really exciting to have metrics around time, because it really excites people. So I think you can do metrics around that. I mean, all the ESG metrics are what they are. So I think those are pretty self-explanatory. But I think, again, it's just about being a little bit more creative around those metrics. Understanding, too, though, that you should really never have more than 3 to 5 maximum anyway. Don't overcomplicate the situation. You know, I'm a big believer that you implement something and then you leave it alone for about 18 months and allow it to grow and, you know, really become part of the DNA, part of the culture, then you move on to something else. You can't have a business where it's just always another one and another one and another one. You're just going to drive people crazy.
You see me look at Laura there. It's like 18 months. I was like, wow, that's a long time. But it's so true. Yeah, it's so true. And I think we are prone, particularly if you have you know, entrepreneurial people running a business, they are prone to changing things too quickly and not giving it a pace of time to actually embed and see where maybe some of the alterations might need to be made.
And culturally as well, people just need time to adapt, you know, and every culture is different as well. And if you have a wider remit, they do things different in Italy than they do in France, and definitely in the UK and the US. So you have to be respectful of that.
Yeah, and you've traveled around quite a bit across your career. I'm interested to know some of your favorite areas that you've worked in. So you've worked across 18 different roles within hospitality. Can you give us like a flavor of what was your favorite and where's your favorite place that you've worked?
I spent a little time in Switzerland. I really love Switzerland. I call it baby Canada. So I really loved it there. Obviously, I loved Canada. I did like working in the US. It's really funny, you know, when I moved to England, it was a culture shock. You know, I remember coming over here and somebody, I went into a meeting with somebody and they were talking about redundancy. And I came out of the meeting and I turned to my assistant and I said, what is a redundancy? Because we didn't use that kind of terminology in America and Canada. So it was hilarious. And considering I had to make 300 redundancies, it was good to know that word.
Every day is a school day.
Every day is a school day, that's for sure. Yeah, but I will say it was more of a culture shock moving to the US from Canada than it was to England or Europe. You know, the American mentality is just different, and the way they think, really, really quite fascinating. You know, you know, I love them all. As far as jobs, I enjoyed my limited time in finance. It was very interesting to see the different, you know, the way everything you do comes down financially on just on a numbers perspective, you know, because you're so used to an operations being about the people, the experience, the, you know, and then you realize there's a whole numbers behind it. I'm so glad I had that experience because it really served me well as my career went on. Yeah, I loved working in food and beverage. That was fun. I spent time in the kitchen as well. You know, a lot of different things. Again, what really, you know, it's sort of what I mentioned earlier. What really surprises me though, is that, you know, you can ask for a change that you want to put against the company. And like, I always found in America that change was done within 2 weeks and I was already getting metrics on it and stuff like that. And in the UK, it took maybe a month. In France, it took 3-4 months. In Italy, it took a year. It didn't matter what it was, even if it was just move the coffee cup to the left-hand side of the table, it took a year. And I remember like getting quite frustrated and flying to Italy and, you know, talking to the team and them saying, you know, Jenny, you just need to understand, you know, and you do, you learn that, you know, okay, that it's a very unionized country, so they have to go through that process. It's a very religious, you know, is the coffee cup Catholic? You know, I mean, and they just have to go through this whole process. But then at the end of the year, they're doing it much better than the Americans who did it in 2 weeks. You know, so everyone just has a process and you have to respect that culture. And again, that's what makes your company strong if you do understand how it works globally. So
I think it's so true, isn't it? And you get different challenges from an HR perspective off the back of that. Like, I bet you though, there's less burnout, there's less mental health challenges, there's less change fatigue in some of those European countries that just do things a little bit slower than in the US. So I think there's, you know, there's pros and cons, isn't there, to everything?
Yeah. I mean, in Milan, our employee turnover was like less than 10%. You know, whereas in like in England, it's like, you know, 25-30%, you know, it's relative, you know, they stay in their jobs a lot longer. They like a routine. It's very family oriented, you know, and you've got to respect that. You've got to understand they need the time for that. And they're working for their families, you know, and so you take all of your decisions and you apply them to make sense for the regions you're in. You don't compromise on what you're looking for, but you are very respectful of who's doing it.
A last little wrap up from us, because I'm sure we could just sit and talk to you all day. Tell us a little bit about what you have seen done well and what you've seen done not so well when it comes to management development specifically in the hospitality industry and in the roles that you've held.
Yeah, I think twofold what I've seen done well. I've seen, you know, a lot of desire to want to, okay, this is the issue at hand. So what can we do from a training perspective to like address that? So I see that there's a desire for that. And I think that's good. I think what's not done well is it's great to have a training program, but if you don't give your employees the time or your leaders the time to, you know, it's one thing to sit in a great class. There's nothing better than sitting in a class or taking a program and then thinking, oh God, I'm coming out of this with something. You know, I really feel like this is magical almost, you know, I've learned something about myself. And I think the best programs are designed to learn about you, not the issue, you know, because you need to understand yourself, because that has a huge effect on how you address problems. You know, I really believe human nature is the real guide for people. So I think, you know, and what's not done well is then, you know, after the program, then you got to give people the time to implement it and follow it up. And, you know, that you can't just go in and do a training program. You know, what is the follow-up that goes with that? Also, I mean, I think you have to be careful on tenure of programs, meaning length of programs. We used to have programs that were 5 days long and they were great and there was nothing wrong with them. But, you know, the commitment that needs to go in before that and after that has to match. I will say that. I think what I've seen done really well, though, is that at one point, you know, for the longest time, there was a real hesitation to online learning. Now, of course, it's part of life. But, you know, we always used to, you know, believe, you know, we're a we're a people-centric company. You know, it's always about the relationship with the guests. Why would we stick our employees in front of a computer? So one of the things that we did well for many, many years is we took all of our programs, even our 8-hour, 16-hour, 24-hour programs, and we turned them into 15-minute segments so they could be taught every day. So a program may take 60 days to train, but every day you were doing 15 minutes and you know, and they were done like through little cards and activities and you know, they could be done with lineups. In a 24-hour business like hotels, that was really, really convenient, especially at line level. And I think that worked really, really well. I'm a big believer in bringing people together though, I will say. But I'm a huge proponent of it. You know, when business is down, your training budget should go up. You know, whatever customers you are getting, you need to keep, you know, whatever, you know, if a business is down, don't lay off your employees, put them through training. I know that's easier said than done financially. I understand all that has to be worked on. But you know, the long-term return and dividend from that will pay off like gold. I'm a huge believer in that.
And I think that's such a refreshing viewpoint, because I think, you know, often the L&D budget's the first thing to go when people struggle, but actually that's the time to double down, get people right. Because often the challenges or the reasons for the downturn or the high turnover or whatever the challenge is, often down to people. So actually, if we don't then adjust it through training, you're often exacerbating that issue.
Absolutely, absolutely. And don't underestimate your employees. You know, you can spend all your time talking about your culture and your vision and your values, and they're more than words on the wall and all that kind of stuff. And then a crisis comes along and the first thing you do is, you know, take away things and stuff like that. I understand that sometimes that has to be done, and I don't envy any customer that's in a downturn, because it can be very difficult, challenging, all of those types of things. But you really have to make very, very, very wise decisions in how you protect your culture in a crisis, because it will really haunt you. And it's really difficult to come back from that. So,
what a lovely lesson to end on. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. We've really enjoyed having you on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So let's look at some key takeaways from Genio's episode. The first being that definition of culture is the decisions that people make, I think is such a great reflection point for any senior leaders listening. So whatever you think that your culture is it reflected in the decisions that people make every day? Because if those decisions that people are making are actually at odds with the culture that you're trying to build, you might need to go back and revisit some of those pillars and the activities that you're using to drive it. The second, which I thought was such an interesting way to look at a role in an industry that's typically high churn, is about giving people the purpose and opportunity to live. So actually thinking about how the job that they have gives them opportunities, whether that's through the salary that they're getting, whether that is through the experiences that you're creating, but about making it much more about the purpose and the opportunity than just a transactional job, and the role that that then has in long-term loyalty. Genio also talked about this really interesting concept around having mentors be the grandparents and not the parents. And actually that shift from having the really senior seasoned leadership mentor newer employees versus that maybe middle leadership function or middle manager function mentoring the people underneath them, and actually the shift that then makes in how invested people feel. So let's wrap up with some takeaways from Genio's episode. The first has to be around culture being the decisions that people make. And actually, if your decisions that are happening in your business are at odds with the culture that you're trying to create, you may need to go back and revisit how you're purposefully driving that culture. The second being about giving people purpose and opportunity and thinking about how the job that you provide them with does that, as opposed to just being a transactional role. And that when you can give people opportunity and purpose, whether that's through as simple as the salary you give them, whether it's through the opportunities that you give them access to, whether that's the community that you're building in your business, when you can actually connect it to opportunity and purpose, it becomes much more much more than a job, and actually much more around loyalty, even in high chain industries like hospitality. And the final concept that I really just want to touch on is that thought process of grandparents mentoring versus parents, and actually the shift that people feel from an investment perspective when they're being mentored by people that are not just one or two rungs above them, but are actually the most seasoned senior people in the business. And that difference that that can make in that mentoring relationship when it's not actually the parent or potentially a much closer direct manager, when that actually becomes a bit further apart and it becomes that grandparent role, the difference that that can make in the effectiveness of your mentoring program.
Thank you for listening to Misbehave. Follow us so you don't miss out on other episodes.